There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
Good evening, and welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror, eh? Yes, come in. You're just in time to join me in some chess. I like the necks better, but the chess are okay too, huh? Sure. You know, you're probably wondering where I got it, huh? Well, this torso was fenced. You can tell by the sword wounds, huh? I hope he had a sense of humor, though, huh? Because he sure got plenty of ribbing, huh? Yes, there's a lot of fun poked at him. Fun for the ones doing the poking, that is, huh? Sure. You know, but the sad part is he was just a kid, not even a year old. At least he only had one ring around the collar, sure. And yet he was a romantic. How else could you go hit over heels and farewell to arms at the same time, huh? Sure. Perhaps he was a baby soldier. You know, served in the infantry, huh? It sure would explain the uniform justice. Death all over, huh? Sure. Which reminds me of tonight's lineup. It's gore galore. We hear suspense with No Memory for Murder and Dimension X with The Belt. But first, it's time for the haunting hour with The Six Fun So Scary!
Stay where you are. Do not break the stillness of this moment. For this is a time of mystery. A time when imagination is free and moves forward swiftly, silently. This is the haunting hour. The Six Buttons. Sleep does not come easily to the harbor. Even at 2 a.m, there is a restlessness fretting the black ships and the green water. The whistles still blow, but their sound is melancholy and weary. The lights along the shore begin to blink their good night. In one of the harbor's darkening caverns, sleep will be forgotten for some time. Its solitary customer, an ancient sea captain, rests heavily against the bar. Within him burns a tale, and he will not rest till it is told.
2 o'clock. Well, it's getting late, barkeep. You'll be wanting to close.
I'm open till 3.
Well, my ship doesn't weigh anchor till then. You both have time.
Yeah.
You're sure you want to hear the story?
Story? Sure. Why not?
Another glass, then.
Right.
You join me?
I don't mind.
Well, as I say, the land's no place for a man of the sea. Captain Jeremiah Stebbins should have known that. And he should have known there wasn't a crueler man anywhere in the world than Harvey Adams. Captain Stebbins treated Harvey and his wife, Paula, as if they were his own children. He took them in, shared his home with them. But that wasn't enough for Harvey. Oh, no. Harvey knew something about Jeremiah Stebbins' money. And that gave him the idea. The idea that became a mania, a disease. And the disease infected Paula, too.
Harvey, is he?
Let's get started, Paula. We've got to get out of here fast.
Did everything go all right?
Be quiet, Paula. Hurry. Well, it's over. Went as smoothly as clockwork, just like we planned. Funny, I don't feel the least bit nervous now. Do you?
I'm frightened, Harvey.
Why, it'll wear off. You know, the moment I laid his hat and stick on the riverbank, a great feeling of peace came over me. Seemed as if I was stepping into a new world. And that's what it's going to be for us, Paula. A new world.
He was good to us, Harvey.
Yes, yes, of course he was. But think how much better he's going to be to us this way. Oh, there's the bridge ahead.
All right.
No cars behind us. Good. All right, now, slow down. Well, here goes the wrench out the window. There. Long may it rest at the bottom of the river. All right, now, back to the house. We've got to be there before Mrs. Weller's returns.
What if we made a mistake?
There's been no mistake, Paula. I'm just as sure of that as I'm sure that Captain Stebbins is dead and lying at the bottom of the river.
As attorney for the late Jeremiah Stebbins, and in accordance with the instructions of the deceased, I have called together you, his beneficiaries, for the reading of his last will and testament.
They've found the body, Mr. Rand?
No, Mr. Adams, not yet. However, the police informed me that Captain Stebbins has been officially declared a suicide.
Oh, I can't believe he's gone, Mrs. Adams. I can't believe it.
Mrs. Weller, please.
Yes, ma'am.
You may begin, Mr. Rand.
I, Jeremiah Stebbins, being of sound mind and disposing memory, do hereby make my last will and testament. To Agnes Wellers, my housekeeper, for whose constant devotion and kind care I have been ever thankful...
I was only too happy to do whatever I could. You know that, Mrs. Adams.
I know, Mrs. Wellers. And he knew, too.
Of course he did, Mrs. Wellers.
Oh, Mr. Adams, I'll miss him. Oh.
We all will. Now pull yourself together. All right, Mr. Rand.
Yes. To Agnes Wellers, my housekeeper, for whose constant devotion and kind care I have been ever thankful, I hereby bequeath the sum of $25,000. In addition, it is my will and desire that Agnes Wellers be permitted to reside in my house, in the quarters which have been her home, for so long as she may desire to remain there. To Paula and Harvey Adams, who have been my close and trustworthy friends and who have filled my life with bountiful happiness, I bequeath all my property and my remaining monies, which total $250,000.
Why, how kind of him. We were nothing to him, really, but he treated us like a father would.
There's more. Another provision. It is my will that this legacy shall be transmitted to Paula and Harvey Adams 6 months from the date of the reading of this, my last will and testament, provided that the following terms are fulfilled. And in the event that these terms are not accomplished, I hereby will that my entire estate shall go to Agnes Wellers.
What, sir?
Shall I go over it?
No. Never mind. Continue.
During the period prior to the transmittal of the legacy, Paula and Harvey Adams shall deliver to my appointed attorney each month one of the 6 brass buttons from my sea jacket.
Brass buttons?
That's what it says, Mr. Adams. Each month, one of the six brass buttons from my sea jacket.
Oh, I don't believe it.
Harvey.
Why, it's a trick. The will wasn't that way when I...
When what, Mr. Adams?
Well, I mean, it's preposterous. Captain Stebbins wouldn't do that to us.
Do what?
Why, it's ridiculous. Brass buttons from his sea jacket.
Mr. Adams, this is Captain Stebbins' bona fide will. Those are the terms. You must comply with them. It shouldn't be very difficult, should it?
Well, no, I guess not. I'm sorry, Mr. Round. It was just a little unexpected. You shall have the buttons, all six of them.
Sir?
Yes, Mrs. Weller.
Sir, the day that Captain Stebbins took his life.
Yes?
The day they say he took his life. He was wearing the sea jacket with the six brass buttons.
Although Jeremiah Stebbins is officially listed as a suicide, there are a few questions I must ask. Just routine.
Why, certainly, Inspector, we understand.
And Mrs. Wellers?
Yes, sir.
According to your former employer's will, Mrs. Wellers, and the fact that Captain Stebbins' body has not been found as yet, there is an excellent chance, isn't there, of your becoming the sole beneficiary of the Stebbins estate?
Oh, I don't want the money. Captain Stebbins meant it for Mr. Adams and his wife.
Yes, so it appears, but in case the buttons aren't delivered...
Oh, don't say things like that.
Better, please. She's very upset.
I merely said, Mrs. Adams, there is a chance of her getting the money.
But you make it look as if I...
As if you what, Mrs. Wellers?
Well, sir, as if I... Oh, Mr. Adams, make him stop. Please, make him stop.
The inspector doesn't mean anything.
Inspector, we've had a trying day, all of us. Mrs. Wellers, my wife, and I have suffered a great loss. As far as I can see, there's nothing you can accomplish by your question.
No?
No. You've upset this poor woman enough. I must ask you to leave.
I hardly expected anyone to get so excited over a few routine questions. Since it's quite obvious who will receive Captain Stebbins' legacy.
All this, Paula. All this and all his money will be hers if we don't find those buttons.
But Harvey, she said he was wearing the jacket.
Paula, that jacket is someplace in this house. I know it. Did you look where I told you?
Yes. We'll never find it.
I'll search through the attic.
Captain Stebbins knew what we were going to do with him. That's why...
Stop it, Paula.
This closet. I can't open it.
What?
I think it's locked.
Here, let me try it. It is locked, Paula. I think we've come to the end of our treasure hunt. I'll open this door.
Mr. Adams, my room, what's happened? What are you doing here?
Mrs. Wellers, unlock this door.
But you have no right to come in my room this way. If Captain Stebbins were alive...
He's not alive. He's dead. And this is my house now. If you don't unlock this door, I'll call the police.
Villa... I'm not one to cause any trouble, Mr. Adams.
Well, then unlock it.
Here's the key, sir.
Better. Paula, it's not in here.
I told you, Mr. Adams. He was wearing that sea jacket with the buttons the day he died.
Are you going to sit here all night sewing?
Harvey, do you think Mrs. Wellers suspects us?
Of course not. She'd have gone to the police long ago.
Maybe we'd better get out of this house. Now. Maybe we'd better get out of this city.
Get out of this house. That's rich. In 3 more days, the first month will be up, Paula. Then we'll have to get out. Because of 6 ridiculous brass buttons. This house, everything will be hers in just 3 more days.
Yes, just 3 more days.
Yes, you almost sound relieved.
Relieved? Yes, Harvey, it's better this way.
Better? Lose everything? To work, to plan, and be left with nothing?
Oh, we can start all over again.
Start over again with what?
We have each other.
Each other. It's great. Paula, for heaven's sake, stop that sewing. Put it away.
all right, Harvey. Harvey.
What's the matter?
My sewing box.
What is it?
There, in the box.
In the box. Paula. We found the first button from Captain Stebbins' sea jacket.
Please, please, Harvey. Let's go away. We can't stay in this house another day.
We're not leaving.
Captain Stebbins brought that button here.
Stop that nonsense, Paula.
He's come back from the dead to punish us. Harvey, this house is cursed. We've got to get out of here before it's too late.
Shut up, Paula. Do you want Weller to hear us?
She knows we killed him.
Paula.
They all know.
I told you to stop it.
Harvey.
Stupid, hysterical fool. You'll ruin everything. That button didn't fall out of thin air, Paula. Somebody is trying to frighten us. All we've got to do is keep our nerve. If we play our cards right, we can't lose, Paula. We can't lose. Paula, I'm going out. Did you hear me, Paula? I said I'm going out.
All right, Harvey.
Don't leave this room till I get back. And keep away from Weller's, understand?
Yes.
Did my top coat come back from the cleaners?
It's in the closet.
Paula, when did this coat come back?
Yesterday.
Who put it in the closet?
I did.
Well, look at it. Look.
Harvey.
It's been sewn on. The second brass button.
He did it. He's come back again. From the dead.
The second button. Here it is, Mr. Rand.
You're early this month.
Yes, I didn't want to keep you waiting.
Northbound express on track 5, leaving at 2:20. Northbound express on track 5, leaving at 2:20.
Ticket for Chicago, please.
Round trip, ma'am?
One way. Hurry. Please hurry.
Paula, stop.
Oh, Harvey.
You can't run away from me. I won't let you. Come along. I warned you, Paula, not to leave the house.
I can't stay there, Harvey. Please let me go away, please.
Let you go away? Do you think I'm crazy? I've got to keep my eye on you, Paula. For all I know, you may be behind this button business.
Oh, Harvey!
I said you may be. Or it could be Weller's or that lawyer, Rand. I don't trust any of you. I'm taking no chances. You're going back to the house, Paula. And if you try this again...
Pardon me, madam. Here, you drop your change purse.
I'll take it, thanks. Don't be so careless, Paula. Here.
But that's not mine.
Not yours. Say you, this doesn't belong. It's disappeared in the crowd. I wonder whose it is. Maybe there's an identification inside. Paula. Look. In the purse.
Throw it away, Harvey. Please.
You fool, Paula. Do you know what this means? The third brass button.
She's sleeping now.
Will she be all right, Doctor?
I'd say she's on the verge of a complete mental collapse.
Oh?
I suggest you take her away immediately. A few months in the country will bring her about, I'm sure.
If that's not possible. I mean it. Not right now. I have important business to attend to.
I can offer no other advice. You keep your wife in this house, Mr. Adams. You are doing so at the risk of her sanity.
Got to pull yourself together, Paula. Do you hear me?
Captain Stebbins will come back. He'll come back to this house again. It's cursed. I've got to get out of here. I've got to.
No, you're staying in bed. Lie down.
I can't. I can't stay here. Please let me go. Please.
Stop it, Paula.
Oh! Oh!
You're not leaving yet. And stop that crying. Just when there's a chance, just when things are working out the way we planned, this has to happen.
I don't want the money. I don't want this house.
Well, I do. And I'm going to get it. Nothing's going to stop me. Nothing. Time for your medicine, Paula. At least it'll keep you quiet for a while. Where is it? In this drawer? Here's the box. Paula, stop that infernal weeping. Here, take one of these. Paula. The fourth button. In the box.
Oh, I told you, Harvey, he'd come back again. You wouldn't believe me, would you? I told you he'd come back again from the river.
Hello?
Mr. Adams?
Yes?
Mr. Rand.
Oh, yes, Mr. Rand.
I've been waiting for you. The fifth button is due today.
Yes, I know.
Are you bringing it down? I'm afraid I can't wait any longer in my office here. I'm due home for dinner. I'm leaving now.
Well, I have until midnight. You'll have your fifth button, Mr. Rand. Don't worry about it.
Then I'll see you before midnight. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, Mr. Adams,
yes?
Here's a package for you. Just delivered.
Who brought it?
Oh, messenger, just a moment ago.
Who was he?
Well, I don't know.
All right, Mrs. Weller, that's all.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes. The fifth button.
The fifth button. Here it is, Mr. Rand. I'm sorry to have interrupted your dinner.
It's quite all right. Well, Mr. Adams, a month from today, you'll be a very rich man, providing you have that sixth button.
Sixth button. It hasn't come, Paul. I've been tricked.
Yes, Harvey, you've been tricked by a dead man.
30 minutes to go. In just 30 minutes, the deadline will be reached. I'll lose everything.
You won't get that sixth button, Harvey. You'll never...
Shut up, you crazy fool. That button will turn up yet, Paula.
It'll be too late then. You'll never get that money, Harvey. Captain Stebbins doesn't want you to have it. Don't you know that?
No. It's not Captain Stebbins. It's you, Paula. You don't want me to have it. Paula, where is that sixth button?
I don't know, Harvey. Captain Stebbins knows.
Stop that nonsense. Where is that sixth button? You're hiding it from me.
No, Harvey. I'm not hiding it.
You're lying. Tell me where it is.
Don't. You're hurting my throat.
Are you going to tell me where that button is?
I don't know.
You're lying, Paula.
Oh,
tell me where you hid that sixth button or I'll kill you. Tell me. Tell me. You know where it is, Paula. Tell me. Do you hear me? Tell me. Paula. Paula. I've killed you. My name is Harvey Adams. I killed my wife.
You what?
I killed her because I loved her. I loved her very much. Everything I did was for her, and now she's dead, and I'm here alone. You.
Hello? Hello?
I'm not alone. Not alone. Fool me. I know what you are. You're a ghost. But you can't frighten me. You're dead, Captain Stebbins. I killed you. You've come here to frighten me, but you can't. Do you hear me? I'm not afraid of you. The caller was. You did it, Captain Stebbins. You made me kill her, and now you've come to... No. No, don't come near me. Stay away from me. No. No, I don't want it. Take it away. It's cursed. I don't want the button. I don't want it. Take it away. Take it away.
And when the police arrived, Barkeep, they found Harvey Adams alone, cringing in a corner, stark, staring mad.
Well, that's enough to drive anybody crazy, seeing the ghost of the man you killed.
Hmm. It wasn't a ghost.
Huh? Oh, now, hold on. You mean Captain Stebbins wasn't really dead?
It's an old saying, men of the sea drown hard. Harvey Adams would have done well to know that. His wrench never killed the captain. The water revived the old man, and he returned from the dead for justice.
For justice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see. But who are you? Now, you're not going to tell me you're...
Captain Stebbins?
Yeah.
Well, Barkeep, my ship will be weighing anchor. I'll be getting along. As I say, the land's no place for a man of the sea.
From shadows and stillness, mystery weaves a spell of strangest fascination, charging the mind with doubt and fear. For mystery is a strange companion, a living memory in the haunting hour.
Kids, that was scary now, wasn't it? Sure, I had to check and see if I had a yellow-bellied button, huh? Sure, you know, that poor Mr. and Mrs., they had a scheme up their sleeves, but instead lost their shirts. Oh, yes, not to mention their lives. In fact, now that I mentioned it, in a way, their lives were hanging by a thread, huh? Literally, sure. You know, you're probably thinking, I know what you're thinking, you're probably thinking, so what, huh? So what? Get it, thread? You know, but it's all their own fault. They never should have tried to rip off the zipper, huh? I mean, skipper. Sure. Yeah, they should have listened to me in the first place, because I always say, don't mess with laundered money. Sure. Because if you do, things may not iron out the way you want them to, huh? Sure. Well, I better button it up and move on to our next show. It's Suspense with No Memory for Murder. So scary!
Here to introduce this half hour of suspense.
Now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Don't ever answer a telephone just because you've got nothing else to do. Just because you're curious. I was sitting in my big red leather swivel chair, my feet on the largest mahogany desk money could buy, a bottle of the best scotch balanced between my special custom-built shoes. Everything the best. That's the way I like to operate. The gold lettering across my office window spelling out Harvey Warren, counselor at law. I liked it that way. It had dignity. Yeah, I had everything. I had a house that rambled for 14 rooms. I built that house for Lily. Lily. She was beautiful. From the top of her auburn hair to the tip of her pretty little toes. Yeah, I had it all. I had everything. Till the day my Lily was murdered. That's why I couldn't stand being home anymore. I could smell her cologne in every room, a touch of it on every chair. That's why I was at the office that night, with nobody but the bottle to keep me company. And that was the call I should have never answered. But at night, eight stories up in an empty office building, that ringing sounded urgent. Like it was the most important thing in my lonely little world. Hello?
Warren.
Who's this? Oh.
You know who this is.
Yes, Bolster.
No name, stupid. What are you doing at your office this time of night?
What do you want?
Have you got it?
Well, sure I've got it. It's all ready for mailing. I'll drop it off when I leave.
Don't bother. I'm going to pick it up tonight.
But I told you I'd mail it.
I changed my mind. I'm coming over. I'll be there at 10 o'clock.
Oh, I can't make it tonight. I'm leaving. I'm just going out.
I'll make it, all right.
Yeah, but why all of a sudden...
Tonight, Warren. 10 o'clock. And, Warren, don't try anything.
What are you talking about? Why should I try anything? What could I try?
You could be cute enough to figure out something. You're that kind of a guy. So, don't try anything.
Something must have gone wrong. All I was supposed to do was mail him his money. What got into him? Why would he want to come to my office now, at night, when the building was empty? Couldn't be just the money. He was coming for something else. Something else. But what?
Police Department, Jonesy.
Get me homicide.
Now, hold on. He wants homicide, extension 458.
Hello?
Homicide?
This is homicide.
Is Joe there? Lieutenant Joe Scarpone?
Who's calling?
Harvey Warren.
Oh, hello, Mr. Warren. Hope you've been feeling better.
Well, thanks, Mike. I don't have much time. Would you get me Joe?
Well, he ain't here, Mr. Warren. Well,
where is he?
I don't know.
I've got to get to him.
Something wrong?
You've got to locate him, Mike.
Well, I've got a whole police department, Mr. Warren. Just say the word. What's wrong?
Only Joe. He's the only one that can help me.
Well, he may be calling in.
Then tell him to call me at my office, will you? Don't make any mistake, Mike. I'm at my office. I couldn't get it out of my mind. What had made Bolster switch like that? What had gone wrong? Must have figured it out and was coming over for just one thing. To kill me.
Lyon Apartments.
Lieutenant Joe Scarpone, please.
One moment. Answer.
Well, where can I reach him? He must have left some kind of a message.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. He hasn't been in all evening.
Well, tell him to call Harvey Warren.
Yes, Mr. Warren.
At my office, understand?
Does he have your number, sir?
He's got my number. Don't make any mistakes. At my office, he's got to reach me before 10 o'clock. That's tonight, understand?
I'll tell him, Mr. Warren. Thank you.
Madge. I've got to try Madge. He's got to be at Madge's place. I should have thought of it before. Busy. That must be Joe. He's got to be there. That's Joe trying to get me. I've got to wait. Have to give him a chance to get through. Why doesn't it ring? Why doesn't he call? Can't wait. 6, 9, 4.
Hello?
Madge, baby?
Oh, hello, Warren. What's this sudden devotion?
Oh, Madge, let me talk to Joe, and don't tell me he's not there.
Of course he's not here, Warren. What's the matter with you?
Madge, I gotta find him.
Well, I am expecting him.
When?
Soon.
Don't give me double talk, Madge. When?
We've got a date, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock? That's too late, Madge.
What's the matter, Warren?
Well, where can I reach him? Where can I find Joe?
Well, did you try his hotel?
He's not there.
Well, call homicide.
He's nowhere, Madge.
What's wrong, Warren?
There's no time to explain. Help me find him, please.
I'll do what I can.
At my office. Don't forget it. My office. Before 10. everywhere, every bar he'd ever had a drink, his favorite restaurant, even the Turkish bath where he played handball and got his rub down. Joe was nowhere. I looked at my watch. It said 9:31. The clock on the wall showed 9:35. Now I wasn't even sure of the time. I couldn't afford to be wrong about the time.
At the tone, the time will be 9:35 and 10 seconds.
The clock on the wall was right. There wasn't much time. Even if I get a hold of Joe, it'd be too late. My mind was starting to play tricks, starting to tie my insides up in 100 little knots. Suppose Bolster got here early. Suppose he got here before 10 and no Joe. I got up in a panic. My shirt was soaked wet to my back. I could run, yeah. I could get away while it was still time. But then Bolster would really know something was wrong. Maybe he wasn't going to kill me. Maybe he was just coming for his money. I had to get rid of the hysteria. Had to get a hold of myself. No use playing guessing games. I opened the door. I was going to leave. I wasn't going to be a sitting duck for a guy like Bolster. At that time of night, just one elevator was in use. It was directly opposite my office door. The indicator over the door flashed numbers when the car was running. I went to press the button to signal for the night man. Before I could press it, the car started up. Somebody was coming up. I wanted to run. I didn't know where. I was on the top floor. My eyes went to the ceiling. Down the end of the hallway, there was a spiral ladder that led into a trap up through the ceiling. Must have been the opening of the roof. I started to run for it. I stopped. Silly. When all the time there was a stairway going down. I ran to the exit sign and ducked into the stairway. Down one flight and I smacked right into it. A steel gate spread like an accordion across the bottom landing. The gate they always fastened in place at 9 o'clock. Trapped. I was trapped. And then I just stood there. Everything quiet. What happened to the elevator? Then I heard the door open. Downstairs, right below. It didn't come up to the eighth. It was the night man letting off the cleaning woman. I walked back up the steps. The light on the indicator showed the fifth floor. Then the indicator started flashing again. It was going down. Now was my time to signal the night man while he was still in the car. Before I had a chance, the telephone began to ring. It was coming from my office. Keep ringing, Joe. I'm coming. Just don't stop ringing. Hello. Hello, Joe.
Oh, ain't this Gladstone 2707?
That's right. Are you calling?
Oh, give me Sammy.
Who?
I want to talk to Sammy.
Oh, right number, girlie. Wrong party. I looked at the clock. It was no use. Too late. Even if he did call, I started to go. I saw the bottle on the table. I had to take another drink. I felt a little better. Now I have to get out. Hello?
Hello. It's me again.
Look, girlie, there's no Sammy at this number.
I know, but you sounded kind of lonely. I'm lonely, too.
Forget it, will you? Don't tie up my phone, understand?
Well, sure, I know. You're waiting for a call, too?
Get off my number. I don't want this phone tied up.
Sure, I understand, but just in case, why don't you take my...
I started to go and wasn't going to stop. Not for anything. And I realized it might be too late. Suppose he was on his way up. Suppose he was watching the entrance. Why did that girl call back? What did she want? Then I knew it was a trick. A typical hoodlum trick. Bolster was using that girl to check up on me. Playing it cat and mouse. His way of holding me to the phone. Making sure while he was on his way up. A trick. 20 minutes to 10. The clock kept staring at me. The minute hand beating its way around a circle. 20 minutes to 10. That girl again checking up on me. Who did Bolster think he was kidding? He knew I had to answer that phone. Hello.
Warren?
Joe, you don't know how I've been trying to get you all night.
Yeah, I know. Your line's been busy.
Oh, come right over, Joe.
What's the matter?
There's no time to talk. Just get here.
Oh, well, I got a date, Warren. It's on my only night off. You know how Madge is.
Joe, this is a matter of life and death.
Whose life?
My life.
Oh, well, I'll be right there.
Before 10, Joe. It's got to be before 10. to the clock again. I watched the minute hand cutting down the time. If Joe came with a squad car, he'd be here in a matter of minutes. But it was his night off. Maybe he wouldn't be able to get a cab. I took another drink just for luck. I opened the door and listened for the elevator. It didn't take long. I went into the hallway. The light on the indicator was flashing. 2, 3, 4. Maybe it wasn't Joe. Maybe it was Bolster. How was I to know? I ducked into the stairway landing, watching. Joe!
What? Warren, are you nuts?
Oh, I've never been so glad to see you, to see anybody.
You know better than that, coming up from behind a guy. Say, you look terrible. What's wrong?
Well? Don't close the door, Joe.
Why?
When he comes, we can hear the elevator.
Okay. Now, what's it all about?
He's due here at 10 o'clock. He's a killer.
Who is a killer?
I have to start from the beginning.
You don't have much time.
But you won't understand unless I explain.
Okay, but don't start dramatizing. It's 9:45.
Well, we have to start with the day Lily was murdered. Remember I called you? And when you came, you found me sitting in the bedroom looking at her, her head hanging almost to the floor, the rest of her doubled up in the bed, her auburn hair gently suspended like someone spun fine silk around where the bullet went through that lovely head. She was so beautiful. I was sitting there looking at her, and the sounds tumbling around my head, the photographers, the newspapermen, flashbulbs, all like a bad dream.
Look, can't you take the hair away from her face?
I'll cut your head off if you touch that body.
Let's see the gun.
Show him the gun, Mike.
It's a gun. What's there to say?
Well, we understand it's Warren's gun.
You understand nothing until it's official.
The coroner said it happened this morning, about 4 hours ago. Now, how about that, Lieutenant Scarponi?
And quote him. Don't ask me. Mike.
Yeah?
They had enough. Get him out of here.
Oh, wait a minute. Not so fast. I want one more shot of Warren. Put that drink back in your hand, Mr. Warren, please.
Now, look, fella. Don't overdo it.
This is no private affair, Lieutenant Scarponi.
Why don't you lay off?
Well, put the drink back in his hand.
Take it the way he is and get out.
We'd like to do it the way it happened. He had a drink in his hand.
It wouldn't look so good, Lieutenant, if the paper said you were covering up for a lifelong friend.
Mike, get him out of here.
Now, wait a minute.
This is some mess, Warren.
Yeah.
How did it happen?
Well, I loved her, Joe. You knew why I loved her. More than anything in the world. Now look at her.
Yeah.
You know, we've been fighting. Last night was the worst that ever happened. So I ran out of the house.
What time?
Well, right after dinner. I went down to the Silver Grill and had a couple. You can check on that. Then the Biltmore and had a few more. And I remember calling a cab on 7th and Hill. And then, so help me, Joe, that's all I remember.
What do you mean, that's all you remember?
Well, that's all. I drew a blank. We've known each other all our lives, Joe. Did you ever know me to black out?
Oh, that's not like you, Warren.
But that's what happened. I don't remember anything.
Until when?
Until I woke up and called you.
And where did you wake up?
Right here, in the bedroom.
In bed?
No, in this chair, just like I am now. I saw Lily, just like she is now. Blood on the floor. I know she's done for, my beautiful Lily. Then I get up to get a bottle. And I sit down again in this chair. I take one good long drink. I reach for the phone on the night table. I call you. I've been sitting here since, with a bottle.
Mm-hmm. And the gun, is it yours, Warren?
You know that gun is mine.
It was on the floor. It's the gun that killed her.
Joe, do you think I did it?
Well, I don't have to tell you how it looks.
I know how it looks. What I want to know is, do you think I did it?
I'll have to book you, Warren.
Oh, I couldn't have killed her, Joe. You know I couldn't. I loved her too much. I couldn't have killed her, Joe.
Before we get to trial, Warren, for your own good, you'd better start remembering.
Seems like a long time ago, Joe. I just couldn't remember what I'd been doing there in the bedroom after Lily was murdered. Couldn't even remember how I got there.
But 2 minutes ago, you were scared to death. You were trying to reach me every place in town while I'm here.
Do you remember that day in the courtroom?
What's that got to do with the killer who's on his way up here?
Quite a bit, Joe. That's what I'm coming to. But before he comes, you got to know the whole story.
I know the whole story.
Not quite. Think back to that day in court, Joe. You remember how bad it looked for me? All the newspapers were sure I was done for because I couldn't remember where I was when she was killed. And I knew I was somewhere else when it happened. But all the evidence piled against me. Everybody sure I was a dead duck. You and Madge in court at my side and the prosecuting attorney pressing the jury for the full penalty.
Defense offered by the accused is that he doesn't remember. He pleads not guilty, claiming temporary insanity. Forgetfulness as so conveniently happening to the accused cannot be construed as insanity. The state must therefore ask that the full penalty according to the law...
Madge. Here, get me some water.
Now, come on, man. He just couldn't take it that
soon. This court will keep order. Order!
You all right now, Warren? You feel better? Joe.
You mind?
I didn't do it.
Yeah, sure.
Joe, I remember now. I remember. I didn't do it. I was out of town when it happened. I was out of town. I was out of town when Lily was murdered, Joe, and we proved it, remember? And I was acquitted. Like a bad dream, wasn't it?
Look, for the last time, Warren, is this what you call me up to your office for? What's this got to do with somebody coming over here to kill you?
Yeah, like a bad dream.
Okay, Warren, I've got a date with Madge.
Oh, no, Joe, you got a date with a killer.
Then who is the killer?
I'll never forget that day they acquitted me. I walked out of court a free man.
I know you weren't guilty. Your alibi proved you weren't guilty. I know all that.
Yes, Joe. But you don't know. I was guilty.
What? What did you say?
I was guilty.
Oh, you're losing your mind, Warren. You're nuts.
If I'm nuts, what does that make you?
Makes sense, Warren.
Lily thought I was nuts, too. Smart little woman. Thinking she could make a sucker out of me. She was going to leave me. Take half of all I had. That's what she thought.
How did you kill Lily that morning when you were in Glendale? I know you were in Glendale because your alibi proved it.
It was Lily who gave me the idea how to do it. You know how beautiful she was? Every Thursday, the maid's day off, she stayed in bed, slept the clock around, taking care of her looks. I began figuring. Lily all day alone. Lily in bed. All I had to do was hire somebody to kill her while I was out of town.
Then the guy coming up here...
That's right, is the killer. A 3-time loser and very tough. I gave him my gun to do it with, and that's all there was to it. He's the man you want, Joe. He's on his way up here to kill me. Instead of doing that, you'll arrest him and clear your books on the Lily case.
So, this is why it was so important for me to get here, huh?
Well, you have to admit it was neat, getting myself pinched, faking the blackout, stacking the evidence against myself, and forcing you to bring me to trial. I never had a blackout in my life, but it got me off. Great law, that double jeopardy. Puts you on the spot, though, doesn't it, Joe? You know I'm guilty, but there's nothing you can do about it. The law says I can't be tried twice for the same crime. You see, Joe, I happen to be one of those lawyers who knows his law.
Yeah. You've always been at the head of the class. Never worked too hard to get there. Just by looking over the next guy's shoulder and using him was the smart way, huh? Yeah, Kitty, very neat.
I knew you'd be a good sport about it.
Maybe I'm just another dumb cop to you. Well, I don't like anybody making a sucker out of me. Especially a guy who's supposed to be my good friend.
Where are you going?
You got a date with this killer who's due here any minute. Well, I got a date with my girl. Good night, Warren. We're both going to keep our dates.
Well, Joe, what are you trying to do? You're a cop. You've got to pick him up. He's a killer, Joe.
I can pick him up after 10 o'clock, can't I?
Oh, you can't leave me, Joe. You can't leave me here alone.
I don't like your company.
Oh, he's going to kill me, Joe.
He's going to kill you. Now, why should he do that to a guy who pays so well for what he buys?
Well, I'm the only one who knows he fired that gun.
Are you gentlemen all through for the night?
Yeah, I'm all through. He's going to stay.
I'm going down.
Well, step in.
Stay where you are, Warren.
You can't leave me.
Let go of my arm.
Joe!
Close the door, mister. I said close the door.
Joe, he's gonna kill me.
Joe!
Hello, Warren.
What? Bolster. It was Bolster standing there and leering at me.
Joe, he's here! Joe!
Shut up. Don't do that again.
Well, where did you come from?
Well, you don't think I'd ever use a front door, do you? They build these places with fire escapes, you know. Now, into your office.
I started walking. I had to do something. Him right behind. Then I made a break for it, into the office. Then I saw the butt of his gun smash through the window. And then Bolster's hand reached through and unlocked the door.
Oh, you're pretty cute.
Bolster, you're not going to do anything. You want your money. Don't you want your money?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The money comes first.
Well, it's in one of these drawers.
You know, you told me to do it with your gun.
I don't remember which drawer.
I couldn't figure it out. Why a guy should want me to plant his gun.
Well, that's strange. I was sure.
Warren, where's the money?
I'm trying to find it.
Don't stall.
It was a white envelope.
You know, it didn't figure until you went to trial and they acquitted you. That's when I began to worry.
So many white envelopes.
But I still wasn't sure until tonight when I got here. When I see what you've been up to. Find that dough.
I'm trying. I misplaced it.
And then it hit me. You was free and I was liable. No more tricks.
It should be.
Find that dough.
Here. Here it is.
On a desk. Lay it down. Yeah. Now turn around.
Well, don't you want to see if it's all here?
Turn around.
And like a dumb 6-year-old kid, I turned around.
No!
It was the funniest sensation, hearing the shot, feeling the panic, but nothing happened. I turned around. Bolster's eyes started to roll. His mouth opened like he had something to say, and then he dropped.
No, it didn't happen to you, Warren.
Joe.
The elevator opposite your door and the broken window. You can thank them both.
You're a very funny guy, Joe. That's some game you played. Is he dead?
He's dead.
Hey, what are these for?
I'm holding you for murder.
Murder? How can you be so dumb? I was acquitted, remember? You can't try me again.
I'm talking about this murder.
Are you crazy? I didn't shoot Bolster. I didn't even have a gun.
I thought you were one lawyer who happened to know all about the law. But didn't you know that it makes no difference who shot him? The two of you were committing a felony. And the law says all accessories to a felony are equally responsible for all acts resulting from the felony. Unquote.
But Joe...
Including homicide, Warren, including homicide. I don't know all about the law like you, Mr. Harvey Warren. I only know just enough to get by. Let's go.
Joe, wait a minute. Joe, I think I'm going to faint. I'm going to black out, Joe. Wait. You see, I don't remember a thing, Joe. So help me, Joe. I don't remember.
Now, that was scary, wasn't it, huh? I always say, murder and marriage don't mix, huh? Ask Othello. He had a mixed marriage. I wonder if that couple had the song. If they did, I bet it was Do You Remember?
Sure.
Of course, that was the problem. Old hubby didn't remember. That's how he did what he did with a clear conscience, huh?
Sure.
I wonder if he'll go on to give seminars on the subject. He'd sure make a good absent-minded professor, huh? So I hope you've learned your lesson tonight, folks. Murder can make you lose your mind, sure. Up next is Dimension X with the belt. So scary!
Countdown to blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2. X minus 1, fire. Horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. Ray Bradbury's tale, The Veldt. This is the office of Dr. David McLean, resident psychiatrist of the new Chicago Institute of Human Engineering.
All right, Miss Carver, will you take this, please? To Charles S. Howarth, Senior Psychiatrist, New Chicago Institute of Human Engineering. The following constitutes my report on the case of George and Lydia Abbott, which we discussed by telephone. Subject George relates onset of symptoms to the purchase of a $60,000 soundproof Happy Life home. Under narcosynthesis during initial interviews, subject described the experience in the following manner. Miss Carver, would you play back the sonic record of the initial interview?
We've always wanted one, and then we could afford it, so...
Go on, Mr. Abbott. Tell me about the home.
The home? Well, it was supposed to do everything, the agent told us. And it did, I guess. It caused us, fed us and rocked us to sleep, played and sang, and it was good to us. Very good, sure.
Tell me about the nursery.
The nursery? The nursery, ah.
It was completely automatic?
Completely automatic. There were crystalline walls that wavered from 2 to 3 dimensions. There were pseudo-textured floors that shifted from brick to dirt to waving grass. The nursery was the best, but then we wanted the best for the children. Doctor, I must be crazy. We have no children.
What about Peter and Wendy? They're your children.
Oh, no, no. We have no children, Doctor. We have no children.
All right, Miss Carver, to continue. After 3 sessions, the subject was able to recall and accept the idea that he had 2 children. He described the first day.
All right, Peter and Wendy, this is your nursery.
What's so special about a nursery, Dad?
Plenty. Just go in and see.
Do we have to?
You'll be surprised.
Go ahead.
I'm scared. I'm not. Hey, it's nice in here.
It is?
Come on in, Wendy. Boy, look at the pictures on the walls. They're real.
They're almost real. You can change them any way you like just by thinking.
Go on in, dear.
Well, all right, Mommy.
Hey, Wendy. Look what I can do with the picture.
That's the white rabbit from Alice in Wonderland.
Sure. I just thought about it, and there it was.
Let me try. Peter, let me try.
Well, go ahead. Just think.
How about Wizard and Oz? I want to see Wizard and Oz.
Well, dear, there we are.
Oh, they like it.
Why shouldn't they? All I have to do is think, and they've got whatever they want in three dimensions. Color, sound, and smell.
Oh, it's nice that we can give them all these advantages.
Sure. What else are we working for, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what do you want to do this evening?
Well, the Petersons asked us over for bridge, but...
Oh, we don't have to worry about the kids. They'll be all right in the nursery. Come on, Lydia. We deserve a night out.
And in the nursery, the walls were a kaleidoscope of time and space and imagination. The green forest of Sherwood and the quiet forms of Robin and his merry men gave way to the roll of the high seas and the smell of salt in the air as Sir Henry Morgan sailed into the harbor at Jamaica. And behind the crystalline quartz walls, the vacuum tubes and grids and banks of metal image tape spun quietly and efficiently, erasing the line between illusion and reality. Of course, the electric bill from Consolidated Utilities was tremendous, but it was worth it. The happy life home breathed contentedly as life proceeded with soft automaticity, as guaranteed in the brochure and bill of sale.
George.
Hmm?
George, I wish you'd look at the nursery.
What's wrong with it?
I don't know.
I was in the nursery last week. It's perfectly all right.
It's different now.
What do you mean, different?
I want you to come and see.
Are the kids there?
No. Madge Allen took them to a show along with her kids. That's why I want you to look at it now, before they get back.
Oh, all right. What you expect me to do, I don't know. I'm no mechanic.
This isn't a question of a leaky faucet, George.
All right, dear. I'm coming.
The nursery light flicked on as they came down the hall. The relays clicked and the tubes warmed and chemical odor banks and pipes bubbled into life as they paused before the closed door.
Go ahead, George. Open.
On all sides, in three dimensions, stretched the hot, tired landscapes of an African belt reproduced to the last stick and pebble and bit of straw. The ceiling above them became a sky with a hot yellow sun. A wind blew in from the baked beltland. The hot straw smell of lion grass. The cool green smell of the hidden waterhole, the great rusty smell of animals. The howl of the jackal in the distance. And the papery rustling of the great vultures that wheeled and circled under the yellow burning sun.
Let's get out of this, son. It's a little too real.
Oh, George, you promised you'd look around.
Well, I don't see anything.
Wait a minute. There are the vultures.
Filthy creatures.
There. There are the lions. Far over that way.
Yes, I see them.
Well, they're on their way to the water hole. They've just eaten.
Some animal. A zebra or a baby giraffe, maybe.
Can you see it? Are you sure?
It's a little late to be sure. Nothing over there but clean bone and the vultures swooping down for what's left.
Did you hear that scream?
What scream?
About a moment ago.
Sorry, no.
Oh, here come the lions. George, frightening.
Take it easy, Lydia. They're just a loser.
Lions were 15 feet away. So real, so startlingly real, you could feel the prickling fur on your hand and your mouth would stuff with the dusty upholstery smell of their heated pelts. And the yellow of them was in your eyes like the yellow of an exquisite tapestry. The yellows of lions and summer grass and the sound of the matted lion lungs exhaling on the silent noontide. And the smell of meat from the panting, dripping mouth.
George, I'm afraid it's just so real.
You're only an illusion, Lydia, that's all.
Watch out!
Quick,
they almost got her.
Now take it easy. Calm down.
I could feel their breath.
Get a hold of yourself, Lydia. They aren't real. Walls, that's all it is. Crystalloid walls.
They look so real.
Of course they do. But it's all dimensional color reactionary process. A metal tape film behind glass screens. It's all odor of phonics and sonics. Now here. Take my head.
I'm afraid. Did you see? Did you feel it? It's too real.
No.
And we've got to tell Wendy and Peter not to read any more on Africa.
Of course. Of course.
I want you to lock that place up.
But you know how difficult Peter is about that. I punished him last week by locking the nursery for an afternoon and he threw a tantrum. And Wendy, too. Well, they live for the nursery.
It's got to be locked. That's all there is to it.
You've been working too hard, Lydia. You need a rest.
I don't know. Maybe I don't have enough to do. I have too much time to think. All I do is set the menu selected dials at the beginning of the week.
But that's the whole idea. The house is automatic.
I know, but couldn't we turn it off for about a week and take a vacation?
You mean you want to fry eggs for me?
And darn socks. I feel like I don't belong here. The house is wife and mother and maid. How can I compete with the African belt? George?
Hmm?
Those lions can't get out of there, can they?
Of course not, dear. Now, don't think about it anymore.
They ate alone. He sat idly watching the dining room table produce warm dishes of food from its mechanical interior.
You forgot the ketchup.
That's better. It wouldn't hurt to lock the children up in the nursery for a while. It was clear that they had been spending too much time in Africa. A sun, he could feel it on his neck, steam like a hot paw. And a lion, and the smell of blood. Remarkable how the nursery caught the telepathic emanations of the children's minds and created a life to fulfill their desires. The children fought zebras, and there were zebras. Some. Giraffe. Death and death. They were so young. But long before you knew what death was, you were wishing it on someone else. This, the long, hot African belt, the awful death in the jaws of a lion, and repeated again, and again, and again. The children came home dutifully at 8:30.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Pop.
Hello,
hi,
darling.
Do you want something to eat, dear? We're just having dessert.
We're full of strawberry ice cream.
And hot dogs.
We'll just sit and watch.
Sure. Peter, tell us about the nursery.
The nursery?
All about Africa and everything.
I don't understand.
Well, your mother and I were just traveling through Africa with Rod and Reels.
There's no Africa in the nursery.
Oh, come now, Peter. We know better.
I don't remember any Africa. Do you, Wen?
Huh?
Go run and see, huh?
Sure. I'll be right back.
Wendy, come back here. Wendy.
Oh, she'll be right back, Pop.
She doesn't have to. I've seen it. Come on.
Sure, Pop. But Wendy will tell us.
Open the door.
See, Daddy? It's not Africa. It's Florida. Like in Bambi.
There go the deer. See? It isn't Africa.
I see it isn't. Go to bed.
But it isn't 9:00.
You heard me. Go to bed.
Okay. Good night, Mom. Good night, Pop.
Good night.
Good night, dear. I'll be right in.
Wait a minute, Lydia. Look at this.
What is it?
This is the corner where the lions were, isn't it?
What is that you picked up?
An old wallet of mine. There's a smell of hot grass on it. The smell of a lion. It's wet with saliva. And it's been chewed.
George, those smears of blood.
Come on out. Now let's go to bed.
But in the middle of the night, he was still awake. And he knew his wife was awake.
George, how did your wallet get in the nursery?
I don't know. Wendy must have changed the walls from the African veldt. I'm going to keep it locked. Maybe it isn't good for the children. My father used to say children are like carpets. They should be stepped on occasionally. We've never lifted a hand. They're spoiled and we're spoiled. I think I'll have Dr. McLean come tomorrow morning and have a look at Africa.
But it isn't Africa now. It's Florida and Bambi.
I have a feeling it'll be Africa again before then.
Although their automatic somno bed tried very hard, the two adults could not be rocked to sleep for another hour. A smell of cat was in the night air. And in the morning, the stove cooked French toast, and the dining room table poured the syrup and melted butter.
Pop!
Yes?
You aren't going to lock up the nursery for good, are you?
That all depends.
On what?
On you and your sister.
We feel you should have some variety, dear.
I wouldn't want the nursery locked up ever.
Well, as a matter of fact, we're thinking of turning the whole house off for about a month. Sort of camping out.
Be fun for a change. Now, don't you think so, Wendy?
No, it'd be awful. I don't want to do anything but look and listen and smell. What else is there to do?
Oh, all right, all right. Go play in Africa.
Are you going to shut off the house soon?
We're considering it.
I don't think you better consider it anymore, Pop.
I won't have any threats from you, son.
Okay, Pop. Come on, Wendy. Let's get back.
After breakfast, Dr. David McLean arrived.
Oh, I saw the nursery last year, George. It looked all right to me.
You didn't notice anything unusual?
No. The pattern showed the usual violence, the tendency towards slight paranoia. All children feel persecuted by their parents. They're perfectly normal. There it is. Suppose we take a look at it now.
They entered without knocking and sent the children out. The screams had faded and the lions were feeding quietly under the trees.
I wish I could see what they're eating.
How long has this been going on?
A little over a month.
Certainly doesn't feel good.
I don't want feelings. I want facts, George.
George, a psychologist, never saw a fact in his life. He knows about feelings. And this doesn't feel good. Now, my advice to you is to have the whole room torn down and your children brought to me every day for the next year for treatment. Is it that bad? I'm afraid so. You know, that's why the nursery was developed originally, to let us examine the patterns left on the wall by a child's mind.
But what is it? What's wrong with Peter and Wendy?
Hard to say.
I haven't punished them more than average.
Oh, I took away a few gadgets.
Last week, I locked the nursery to show I meant business.
You've let this room replace you and your wife in your children's affections. This room is their real father and mother. And now you come along and want to shut it. But
you can feel the hatred coming out of that sky.
George, turn everything off. The nursery, the automatic kitchen, the whole automatic house. Start now.
But won't the shock be too much for the children?
I don't want them going any deeper. Let's get out of here. Never liked these rooms.
Those lions look real, don't they? I don't suppose there's any way...
What?
That they could become real.
Not that I know.
Some flaw in the machinery, tampering?
No.
I don't imagine a room will like being turned off.
Nothing ever likes to die, even a room.
I wonder if it hates me for turning it off.
Paranoia is thick today. Well, hello. Is this your scarf? Stained. Brown. Blood.
That's Lydia's. Come on, the main fuse box is out here. Right, go ahead. Pull the switch.
They yelled and sobbed and swore and jumped on the furniture, weeping.
It's off and it stays off. The whole house dies as of now.
He marched around the house, cutting switches and pulling fuses.
Don't let them do it. Don't let Pop kill everything. I hate you. I hate you.
Insults won't get you anywhere.
I wish you were dead.
We were for a long while. Now we're going to start really living. Instead of being handled and massaged, we're going to live.
Once more, Daddy. Just once more.
One more minute of the nursery, that's all. Just one more minute.
Oh, George, it can't hurt, really.
Oh, all right, only shut up. 1 minute, and that's the end. Forever.
Gee, thanks, Pop. Thanks.
And then we're going on a vacation. Dr. McLean is coming in half an hour to help us out. Lydia, turn on the nursery for just a minute.
Oh, boy. Come on, Wendy. Come on.
Thanks, Daddy. Thanks a lot.
Just 1 minute, remember. Now, where'd I put those two kids? Lydia.
Don't shout, George. I'm right here.
Did you leave them alone in the nursery?
Well, I've got to get ready, George.
Well, I guess we'd better get them out of there before they get involved with those beasts again. Come on, quick.
Wendy, Peter, what's the matter?
Hurry up. Open the nursery. Wendy, Peter.
They aren't anywhere. Wendy, Peter.
Peter, the door. Open the door. They've locked us from the outside. Peter.
Peter. Wendy, Peter, open the door, dear.
Let us out, Peter. Open the door. It's time to go. Open the door!
George! The lions!
Peter, do you hear me? Open this door!
Open this door!
Son! Son, do you hear me? Let us out! Son!
After David McLean came, half hour later, he found the two children in the nursery sitting in the center of the open glade eating a picnic lunch. Beyond them was the waterhole and the yellow veldt land. Above was the hot sun. At a distance, Dr. McLean saw the lions fighting and clawing and then settling down to feed in silence under the shady trees.
Hi, kids. Where are your mom and dad?
Oh, they'll be here directly.
Good, good. We've got to get along.
He squinted at the lions with his hands up to his eyes. Now they were done feeding and they moved to the waterhole to drink. A shadow flickered.
as the vultures drop down from the blazing sky to finish what the lions left.
Dr. McGree?
Huh? What?
Have a cup of tea?
Which concludes my report to date. There were no lions, of course. Not in a physical sense. Lydia and George were devoured, however, almost as surely as if there had been lions. Their personalities were devoured by the mechanistic marvels which had usurped their role as parents. All four members of the family are under intensive therapy now and are doing as well as can be expected. Send that by telerope, Miss Carver. Oh, and would you ask George Abbott to step inside? I'm ready for him now.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you The Belt, written by Ray Bradbury and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in the cast were Mary Patton, Bill Quinn, David Pfeffer, Beverly Lunsford, Charles Penman, and John Larkin. Your announcer, Fred Collins.
Kids, what's the matter? Cat got your tongue, huh? Sure. I say this much, it's got their tongue in its cheek, sure. But really, what do you expect when you play a game of cat in house, huh? You know, when you stop to think of it, this is one instance where Ma and Pa really got mawed and pawed, huh? I bet the kids will be punished for lying. Get it? Lying, huh? Of course, they were just playing. The lions and vultures call it a game of hide and beak, huh?
Sure.
Which I guess is why they call the room, after all, the play den, huh? Now all they need is a cub house, huh?
Sure.
Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same cat time, same cat station. This is a count warning parents. Don't spoil your kids, or you may be the ones to spoil, huh?
No, no.